here so we don't get to hear about how tough a day. We're still here, though, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, 130 weeks in and episodes in, I still don't know what tough day means. I assumed it was something, like, rude, and then I realized it probably wasn't.
Surely we've taken care of this weeks ago when we first started saying that. Surely we show you the video.
Tell her what hump day is in the broad sense.
Hump day is just the middle of the week. If you view the week as having like the plot of a story.
Back.
Like the plot of a story, rising action, falling action.
Mm-hmm.
The middle has a little hump. It's a hill. It goes
or
up.
Or the back of a camel has a hump.
Yeah, well, that's the connection that was drawn in the commercial.
You'd have to be like, is it the Brits who have on their calendar Sunday at the end of the week instead of...
I don't think... Yeah, hold on a second. Sunday is the final day of the week.
It is.
No,
yeah.
I'm sorry. Sunday begins a new week.
Okay, I was going to...
but then if you view it... Okay, so you're on the eastern side of things, so you see it that way too. I guess it would look more like a camel, and then because the hump would be... Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday would be the hump. Thursday, Friday, and then the weekend would be the head. You know, the ears and the head. So you'd have to be British to see it that way.
So now we have to go Mondays, head days.
Yeah,
head day. Doesn't have the same effect. It's good to be back, guys. You know, I was at Chicago Comic Con, and there was some Game of Thrones represented there. So that was really cool.
Tell us all about it.
I wouldn't say officially... represent, because there were none of the actors were there, but just in general, that was where the fans you could see that there was definitely a significant increase in merch and even some fans dressed up for it.
And there was a big bar crawl in the city that you had to miss, but I assume that still did happen.
Yes, that happened, and I wish I could report on that because that happened during the Comic-Con, but obviously down in the city instead of out by the airport. So that happened. We should get somebody on the show who was there if they remember it.
I thought you said. Oh, no.
From what I hear, it was.
Oh, yes. That's what happened.
Yeah, from what I hear, it was amazing.
Well, today we decided to continue our look inside of A Clash of Kings. It's a book series. Well, it's not necessarily a series. It's a piece of a larger book series that we talk about a lot on the show. Quite a lot, actually.
Yeah, no, when I got back from Comic-Con, I found a note under my pillow. It was really weird.
From Sasha.
That's what it was.
Yeah. Yes. There's a note just under my pillow. I don't know how it got here.
And it said, you miss Monday's recording, better show up on Wednesday. Love everybody else. Yeah.
That was pretty sneaky how you guys did that, but I'm sufficiently creeped out because obviously I'm here right now, so you got me.
Well, that's what happened in the beginning of this chapter. Sansa finds a note underneath her pillow, and it says...
Come to the woods at sunset.
Come to the God's Wood if you want to go home.
Ah, that's what it was.
You got it.
And I wonderfully, you know, I should remember because it was repeated in the chapter about like 20 times.
27 times, actually.
Okay, there you go. Well, you would know. But I actually thought that was really well done. I really enjoyed it because it's like a different narrative style than we've seen so far.
It was. And I love the mechanic within this book that he can just do that, because I've seen books that are from multiple perspectives, but the gumption he takes in making it their own chapters. And just like last chapter, we had a mini detective novel with what Tyrion was taking care of.
Yeah, I mean, the way that he made the words, you know, kind of just, they could be anything. It could be, Sansa was trying to read into it, and really, though, you could take those words any way you wish, and it seems like they were making a statement, but she was trying to discern the author of it, and she just couldn't, you know, because you can read it any way. It's like, come to the Godswood if you want to go home. Come to the Godswood if you want to go home.
I think
come
that's pretty much anyone read of that, actually.
Yeah, there's one read, but her real mystery was who wrote it, because, I mean, she was going over several scenarios in her head, and let's just say it was a gallant, beautiful knight, Sir Loras, for example.
Let's just say that she would never have guessed the notes.
Right, well, either. She thought it could have been Sir Ilan Payne waiting for her with ice, a nice sharpened sword. I mean, it could have been a trick. What better way to test someone's loyalty? Like Joffrey's sitting there one day, and he's like, let's put a note under Sansa's pillow and see how she reacts to it. I mean, that's a very Tyrion thing to do. Why not?
Yeah.
It's very dangerous, yeah. And she was right to be concerned about it.
And she was brave, too. And that's one of the things that's happening with Sansa, I think, in this book especially, is that she's going through like such a huge, interesting thing right now, where she's learning very, very, very slowly to play the Game of Thrones, and And this is probably, you could argue, where it probably begins, or maybe it was already when she looked up at her father's head last
spoke. I think at this point she's just tired of being a victim, I think is maybe the seeds of...
She's learning to, I mean, yeah, you're right. That's her turning point. That's her breaking point. But
she still isn't quite there yet at playing the game, like you were saying, because even in the end with the hound, he says
absolutely
that
not.
Dogs can smell lies. Mm-hmm. Like she still can't hide
it's
her true
slow. And also,
feelings.
Like,
very slow, gradual increase into her being, you know, kind of stronger, somebody who can play, someone who can hide
and
her emotions, as we see in the show.
I mean, absolutely. When you look at the way that she's reacts to Ser Dantas and how she's just like devastated when she finds out that it's not some handsome knight. I mean, that says everything, you know.
But Dantos has some warm feelings for her.
Oh yeah, he does. He wants to be her Florian.
Fortescue. She totally saved his ass.
Florian Fortescue.
They're gonna go get some ice cream. They're gonna go get some ice cream in Diagon Alley.
Yep. Yep.
Yes.
Let's not forget though, guys, this chapter had begun with a letter that said, let's do something. Mm-hmm. And she acted on it, I mean, immediately. We're talking about bravery and her siblings constantly as their chapters happen. But in this example, she sees a challenge and she just decides to go. Within this chapter, she immediately makes the pivot and sneaks out of the castle.
Yeah.
I mean, she took a big risk here. You know, she's strategically slipping by, trying to get past the guards to get to Zelda, and she makes her way to the tree, and that's where she meets Ser Dantos, and he wasn't even sure she was going to come. I mean, I don't think she was either.
Sure she was going to, yeah, absolutely. I mean, she does find her courage, but it's found while in bed, delaying. And then she's like, finally, she hears, I guess, a commotion, and the doors are unsecured, and she's like, I got to go.
Yeah.
You know, no better time than now, no better place than here.
And she acts really now. Wants to go home. I mean, obviously, but it's again, you were saying with the desperation.
That disappointment of arriving and not only it being Ser Dantos, but that he still smells of wine after all of that.
Yes.
He makes a pledge to her. He swears an oath on his honor as a knight. And inside of her head, she's just going, well, I saw you get derailed from being a knight into a fool. Mm-hmm. And then he just so wittingly comes back and references a story and speaks of Ser Florian and how he was a fool and how he turned out to be the greatest knight ever. And so she saw, oh, I'm swept away in this, kind of. I didn't believe how she got swept away so easily. But I mean, it goes back to what you guys were saying. At this point, her desperation is just to the max. She wants to leave. She'll believe anything, really. She'll tie herself to anything to get out.
He made a really, really good point that I noted, which I thought was really interesting, when he said, when I was a knight, I acted more like a fool, and now that I'm a fool is when I'm beginning to feel like a knight.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting. I mean, knowing what we know about well, I guess you guys don't, because he was cut from the show, but knowing what I know about Ser Dantas, he certainly has suffered a lot from what happened to him, but I think he's a really fascinating character, and he probably does a lot for Sansa's development too, I would think, because she has to adjust to the fact that he's not her knight in shining. That, you know, like her stories are not happening like in the storybook.
Yeah, I mean, that quote blew me away. It just shows that people, in a world where people are born into their, people are born into their roles,
into their bowls,
basically their classes.
Bowls.
It's rewarding to see. I mean, I guess a knight is an appointed position, but it's good to see somebody, you know, who's able to transcend that.
Yeah.
He's taking adversity, essentially, and he's hitting it face on, and he's understanding, you know, what exactly put him into this position, and he's trying to be something that makes sense.
To play play devil's advocate, I mean, are we 100% sure at this point that Ser Dantas is working for Ser Dantas, or could there be someone else at play?
Mr. Alcohol is probably a play.
Alcohol.
I couldn't think of that. Mr. Jack Daniels.
Sir Alcohol.
I think he's working for Mr. Jack Daniels.
Could you sit down over here, Mr. Jack Daniels? Thank you, sir. It's time for our business meeting.
Yeah, the ultimate Game of Thrones. They always do tend to get drunk, and then people die.
It's true. I don't think that he's smart enough to be trusted by Joffrey or Cersei, for that matter. And
yeah, but you know, is he smart enough to be acting all of this on his own?
Oh, that's a good question.
I want to know how he got into her room.
Yeah, that's true.
That's just, I'm just so impressed. Like while watching him, like he's swaying, he smells this, that he's homely. He's got nothing going for him except his valor here. He somehow put that note under her pillow and her handmaiden and didn't even notice. So it was probably a note that only Sansa could see.
That's a good question.
How do you get if he's magic
the one that
note?
Put the note?
I don't think he really had the prowess to pull it off. But then again, it could be part of his, I'm working hard to be a better person now.
It could
and maybe
be.
He
I
snuck
mean,
in.
Absolutely. I mean, playing devil's advocate on myself, maybe he, this whole drunk thing is all an act. You know, you never know with these people.
Well, he did say he only had one cup of wine, so that explains the smell.
But we did see, I mean, we see this time and time again, characters like Joffrey completely disregard these fools and these drunkards and all this other stuff. And for the most part, they're justified in doing so, but you know, they're not giving these guys the opportunity to reach their full potential. And Dantos Hollard here is disgraced, and he has these wishes of redemption. And you know, it's guys like him that allow opportunities for escape for our heroines.
Yes, in general.
In general, and also specifically in this chapter.
You know, the fools are very, very interesting characters in the Game of Thrones saga, though. I think this is the first that we meet in the series. But yeah, they all have really, really interesting parts to play, I think.
It's funny. You said fools. I just thought of like an old video game I used to play called Commander Keen and the Oracles.
God, even if there aren't any references to make, we will find ways to make them.
Yeah.
That's true.
The Oracles are like these bumbling men. And you come find them and they're like, da 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 da. I don't even know. It's been too long.
You guys should all play the Discworld game. It's fantastic.
No, but
make a dragon. Anyway, carry on.
Well, so Sansa is in the Godswood. She hears the plan, and then the unfortunate thing is that they're not leaving right away. In fact, Dantos Hollard does not know when they are leaving.
Story of the saga.
He comes up with the plan, which I think is pretty fair. You know, because Sansa just doesn't go to church often enough, and. Really needs to up her religion. She needs to go to the Godswood a little bit more often than she used to, and wait for his sign, his signal, which I assume is just a giant wine bottle in the sky.
Yes, that's the comet, really. And then she flies back to her room like the little bird she is, and who should cut into her path?
The Hound.
Tell us. Yes.
Mr. Sandor Clegane. I almost called him Sir Sandor Clegane. I don't want to make that mistake.
Don't you dare.
Nah, not in his present, especially. No. And he stinks of being drinking, of having Mr. Alcohol in his presence. Mr. Clegane is that he admits it, and he's very open about his alcohol consumption.
And this is the thing. This is what people do in King's Landing at night. You know, it's kind of Sansa's out past her normal bed hours. She would not normally be among the city at this time, but people are drunk. It's just what people do. They pass their cares away.
Yeah, plus there was that distraction at the gate, so the drunken fools that they had to deal with.
Yeah, and Joffrey had the gall to yell bad things at them, which I thought was hilarious, because the Hound made a comment about how brave that was. And in a way, you know, it's more stupidity than bravery. But Sansa sees it as an opportunity to say in her mind, like, I wonder if you'll be that brave when my bro shows up with this big wolf.
I know. Which is brilliant. It's, again, one of those little nuggets of fierceness we get here from her.
Yeah, no, she's definitely got the beginnings of a really witty person.
And he doesn't buy her story. He doesn't buy that she's been out just doing praying at the Godswood. He doesn't necessarily believe that. But at the same time, he's like, what you've been doing, now you're here with me, I'm going to make sure you get back to the castle.
It's such interesting imagery with him and her, I think, with the bird and the hound, kind of like a Disney movie. Don't tell the fans I said that. Oh my gosh.
I think it shows how much he likes her that he doesn't necessarily really care or comment on the fact that she's out and doesn't have much to explain for herself. He's not that suspicious, you know? He's just giving her the benefit of the doubt because, I mean, the beginning of this chapter spoke a lot about the bruises that she has and just in general, her frame of mind being in this place and going through the same things that she's going through. And, you know, she's afraid. Maybe Joffrey has another surprise that has something like, you know, she thought, oh, it could be Joffrey at the Godswood waiting. He was dick enough to take me to see my father's head on a spike, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's a rough situation and he understands that and he's drunk and he's commenting on his drunkenness. And I think he's almost a little bit embarrassed to be that way around her.
I think so. I think that there's definitely, I mean, obviously it's an obvious point to make, but he has some kind of really intense feelings that he's developing for her. And they're all based on him. He's mocking her. He's in some ways trying to keep her safe
yeah.
in his own strange, messed up way. And it's very fascinating to watch, I think.
It's true. He's kind of basically teaching her, yeah. guiding her yeah. by saying, I can, you know, dogs can smell a lie and mm-hmm. I can tell that you're lying. He doesn't, you know, cause trouble for her at all, but also he's telling her that she's not being, or she's being too transparent or not transparent yeah. enough. She, you know, basically she needs to lie better.
Everyone and this is something is that a better inspires liar than her. You. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Every yeah. single one is a better lie than you. So she, it will inspire her to be better. And sure enough, I mean, she says as much that she needs to hide her feelings better.
I thought it was interesting that we finally got a little bit of backstory on why they call him the Hound, because I, you know, being this far into the second book, it's still not clear. Like, he's the king's dog. I mean, that has its own imagery. You can kind of understand how dogs True. Are obedient and they do their own thing. But the story is a little bit deeper than that. And I copied a piece out of the book like I don't often do, but I thought it was interesting to read. And it says, I like dogs better than knights. My father's father was a kennel master at the Rock. I like that they call Casterly the Rock the Rock.
Yeah, that's yeah. pretty cool.
My father's father was a kennel master at the Rock.
The Rock.
One autumn year, Lord Tidos came between a lioness and her prey.
AKA the lioness Dwayne Johnson.
didn't give a shit that she was Lannister's own sigil. Bitch tore into my lord's horse and would have done for my lord too, but my grandfather came up with the hounds. Three of his dogs died running her off. My grandfather lost a leg, so Lannister paid him for it with the lands and a tower house, and took his own son to squire. The three dogs on our banner are the three that died in the yellow Aww. Of autumn grass.
See, I really like this, because they care about animals.
I know. A hound will die for you, but never lie to you, and he'll look you straight in the face. He cupped her under the jaw, raising her chin, his fingers pinching her painfully. And that's more than little birds can do, isn't it? I never got my song. I think I copied too much more at the end, but you get an idea.
Yes.
This is fairly recent because he's talking about his grandfather. I wonder what their banner was before then.
Snails.
It's, yeah. probably, it's probably a camel or snails. But no, it's cool. I'd like to know more about how that sort of thing gets started. I mean, after that event, they decided to make that their sigil. Yeah.
Well, and it explains their position with the Lannisters now.
That's true.
Him and his brother. True.
Yeah,
so a lot of good backstory there, sandwiched in some of his drunken stupor. And the way that we leave the chapter is a famous part from the show where Baelish tells her that she doesn't lie better than everyone else.
Well, he didn't say it. If he had said it, we could have given Baelish the own for this chapter. But we can't give Baelish the own because he didn't even write that letter and he probably had nothing to do with its placement. So it's that time of the show when we do owns of this chapter.
What if he did put the letter there? Okay, my mind is askew now.
Theories are fun. All right, my own is a little random aside that I was like, oh, geez, because Sansa is always going to be Sansa, and we love her for everything that she is, including this little nugget of a train of thought that she had, which is she's talking about how she's missing everybody. You know, she's missing Jane, who, by the way, we're noting in this chapter that Jane Poole has disappeared again. And she's missing her scepter. And then the line goes, once in a while, Sansa even missed her sister.
That actually has a lot to do with my own.
Oh, what's your own?
It's close. My own is, it's a very simple line that I wrote in my notes. It's, she thinks Arya is safe, but to widen it out some, in that same train of thought, I think not much after, she is thinking about her siblings at Winterfell, and she's noting how Arya is probably having a good time with all of them, just enjoying home. We haven't been sure what she thinks about what is going on with Arya, but now we're sure. And I think that has a lot to do with why she's not constantly thinking and being worried about her safety.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's an insult on Sansa's part that she's not totally freaked out, because she thinks they're in Winterfell.
True.
Yeah. And that leaves my own. But this was already said before. It was the quote from Ser Dantos regarding, you used to be a knight. And now that he's a fool, he feels more like a knight than ever. Just for all that budding, that life calling, that never too late than never. Let's just say that.
Yeah, Ser Dantos.
We do have a Twitter own, or an own from Twitter. It's actually two in one. This is from Pluisa, our friend.
Pluisa.
Our friend Pamela. She says alcohol owned Dantos and Clegane, that Mr. Alcohol.
Uh-huh.
Made Dantos brave and made the dog beg for a song. So there we go. And this is, I guess, the opposite of an own. Tara Alston says, if only my birthday were on a Monday, Wednesday, or Friday this year, so I could have a new game of owns to listen to. Way to go, parents.
Thanks, Tara's parents.
Because we all know that your parents decide.
They
what
do.
Day to have you.
Mr. Pup on Twitter, he's not Mr., but we're being formal today. Mr. Pup on Twitter added a design on my bike helmet this summer, and given how traffic is here, it is very fitting. Open the photo, and it is Valor Morghulis written on his bike helmet.
If he meets a girl with the other saying on her bike helmet, then you know it's a match.
Valor Harris. There you go.
There you go. That's great.
Alana says, this is again with owns for this chapter. My own goes to the Hound. Quote, they're all liars here, and everyone better than you.
Ooh. Ooh.
Awesome quote.
Another tweet here from a Mr. Atomics, IGN. He says, my own goes to me for starting a Clash of Kings when you did, and finishing a Dance of Dragons today.
My own goes to me. That's the best. My Sorry. Own goes to that dude for giving himself his own. Well done, though. That's a hell of a lot of reading.
Yeah, well done. That is a lot of reading.
And that concludes the owns for this episode. Of course, every week, every episode, we get your owns off of the Twitter and off of our mail boxes of various sorts, including the wall. Don't forget about the wall. It's the Facebook wall.
The wall.
Facebook wall. You can locate it at facebook.com/gameofowns. We do take owns there. We just don't always get them. So another way that we do it is obviously on Twitter. That's actually the easiest because it's as simple as tweeting us at gameofowns. Hello, my own is this. Me, you, Sansa.
And our Facebook page is a place where Micah and you, Eric, also like to post some funny photographs. So that all that Game of Thrones related stuff is there too. And we can't forget about the commenters, the excellent commenters that help fuel much of our community discussion over on winnerscoming.net, who presents our fascinating little Game of Thrones podcast here that we make with each other on Skype.
It's true.
It's true.
It is known.
It is owned.
And we didn't, as of yet, announce our email address just for those looking for it. It is contact@gameofowns.com. You can email us as well. Comments about the show. Don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes. It is a new month, or it was 13 days ago.
Micah,
August is
from?
Upon us.
It is August.
Hey, guys.
Hey, guys.
Head on over. Yes, rate and review us on iTunes. Nothing less than 5 stars is acceptable.
Yes, we're holding Micah ransom, so you better deliver.
If you ever want to hear Micah again.
If you want to hear Michael's voice, you have to say Michael 3 times into the mirror and think Micah the entire time. I'm Zach Louie.
I'm Selena Logan.
And I'm Eric Skull. Goodbye, everybody.
Oh,
goodbye.
Right, goodbye.
Oh, yeah.
I never want to say goodbye.
By the rocks that I got, I'm still Jenny from the block. Used to have a little
or,
of a lot.
I'm still Cersei from the rock.
Some, yeah,
hey,
that's good.
High five.
Yeah, nice work.
<Thank you. laughs>